Hillian. I am pleased to be joined today by Judge Rico Bishop from Lincoln and Judge Mike Pirtle from Omaha. We have one case on the docket this afternoon, and that is State v. Wells. Counsel, I would remind you that the arguments are live streamed, and so in the event, well, certainly in a case like this, there are names perhaps that we don't want to use full names, so please be aware of the live streaming aspect of the arguments today. But with that, we will go right into the arguments, and so Mr. Ryan, you may approach.
Good afternoon, counsel, and good afternoon, your honors. May it please the court, as you know, I represent Mr. Wells up in Omaha, who's 14 years of age. He's currently housed at the Douglas County Youth Center. And this case, as you know, involved essentially a marijuana deal that went badly in Omaha. It actually is an event where Mr. Wells was not even supposed to be there. There was an incident. There was some issue with someone not having enough money, this being over half of an ounce of marijuana. Five or six minors involved in this case. At some point in time, as the deal goes sour and as a car is driving away, Mr. Wells fires a couple of shots into the car, one of them killing 17-year-old Zachary Parker. Now, obviously, this is a case with a child of this age, 14 years and not even 2 months old. A motion to transfer to juvenile court was obviously filed right away. And we didn't want to rely just upon his age, even though had this incident happened, this terrible tragedy, had it happened just 7.5 weeks earlier, we wouldn't be here today. This matter would be unable to be in the district court up in Douglas County. We didn't also want to rely on the fact that this was charged as just a second-degree murder with no premeditation. That was conceded by the county attorney in Douglas County that this was not something that was planned whatsoever. We also didn't want to rely on the fact that Mr. Wells had no prior juvenile court record whatsoever. He did have one diversion that didn't make it to juvenile court that he completed.
He did have quite a school record, though.
He did have quite a school record. And that's something that obviously I think was concerning to the county attorney in this case, and it was obviously concerning to the judge in this case. But it's because of that, in fact, a lot of that surprisingly was brought out by us because we did that full neuropsychological evaluation that went through all of his school records, everything, a lot of things that wouldn't have been something that maybe the state would have even known. They were all things that, even though they were serious, one of the things that I notice about all of them, whether it be a kid flipping up a table in the cafeteria or him getting in a fight with a coach, those things were never, ever, and the judge said something about wondering why these weren't brought before the juvenile court, but I would seem to assume that it probably had something to do with his school, his teachers, his principal, the resource officers there. I think we can assume that there's a reason that he wasn't charged for some of those events that the judge in this case took very seriously. I think there are other things that a lot of people involved in the juvenile court all across the country would have said these are things that we deal with 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds every single day in the juvenile court system, and we try to help kids so they can deal with their anger differently. You know, but that's something that's extremely different. I note in the appellee's brief, they bring up the case of State v. Goodwin. And that's a case that's good to bring up because that's so similar in terms of a kid who gets an evaluation, a kid who is shot and killed somebody, a kid who is almost the same age, 14 years and 3 months. The difference is that rather than those incidents that you mentioned that Mr. Wells had in school that were not charged, Mr. Goodwin has had an extensive history in the juvenile court of not doing what he was supposed to do, being in and out of placement. He had a prior shooting at a dwelling, which is a drive-by shooting. He has an arson. So those are all things that make those incidents.
Wasn't there evidence in this case, though, that this young man also had a history of carrying guns and involvement with guns?
Well, that comes from one person, one of the minors that's at the shooting, who says that he had a gun on him and that he sometimes carried them. And sometimes they said because of his alleged gang involvement that he carried guns at times for older people in the gang, which may explain why he had it on him in the first place, if somebody had him carry it. But obviously that was concerning for the district court as well, there's no doubt about that. But again, to go back to Goodwin, that was a first-degree murder case that was killing a six-year-old girl, and that was distinguishable from this being a second-degree, non-premeditated case with a kid with no record in the juvenile court. And again, I understand that there was concern that something should have gone to juvenile court, but that's speculation. We don't know why they weren't, but I think we can assume when someone is in charge with something, it's because it wasn't taken as seriously as later on people would want to make that.
Isn't part of the problem here that there's just limited options on what to do with an adolescent like this? You know, I mean, there was evidence that he had some psychopathic issues, and if those could not be corrected and put on the right track by the time he was 19, then do we have a dangerous situation that, you know, we have this individual out in the public again? So isn't that part of the problem, is that there just aren't a lot of good options for the judges when there's so much uncertainty? I mean, this individual pulled out a gun and shot at people without any provocation other than they wouldn't sell the marijuana that day.
Yeah.
That's a little alarming.
Yeah. It is alarming, and I think I wrote a little bit in the brief about the district court in this case looking at that frontal lobe not being matured by the age of 19, and using that in rationale for the type of treatment that he could receive for the next 5 years, as well as if he's going to need some sort of treatment after the age of 19, which we don't know if he would or if he wouldn't, and obviously it might be a situation where we're not going to ever know.
So it works for you and it works against you.
Right.
Right?
Right.
The prefrontal cortex won't be developed till they're in their mid-20s, but we don't have jurisdiction after 19, so what's the court to do?
That's right.
Yeah.
It becomes, do you transfer or do you not transfer? You can use that argument for the same thing. And that's the age issue that is so concerning that we tried to talk about a lot in this transfer issue. With that issue of him being 14 and 2 months, that, again, had it been 7 or 8 weeks earlier, he could have gone to that scene with a semi-automatic rifle and a mask and with an intention to kill everybody there and to kill the witness there and shoot at cops. And the state of Nebraska would have said, he's going to be treated as a juvenile. He's going to be treated, and we're only going to have him until he's 19. Now, what I would say is if the state of Nebraska says that 8 weeks earlier is the case, that you're in some sort of range in that 14 years and 2 month period. Maybe not when you're 15, maybe not when you're 16, but that's a range. Scientifically, I'd call that a margin of error. And when a sheriff or police agency sends a DUI report down to the DMV that has a .088 on it, the DMV sends it back because they say the state of Nebraska has a 10% margin of error on this case. They don't say that when you send in a .073 because the burden is on the state. It's the same situation, I think, in this case. Not to say that I think the court needs to make new law to say age should be a bigger factor than it is, but the court in this case, I think, gave it one sentence saying the age weighs in his favor.
So even if we agreed with you, aren't we constrained by the standard of review and abuse of discretion?
I think the abuse of discretion would simply be, I don't mind the standard as much if we look at it simply as coming to an unreasonable form of reasoning or being clearly against the evidence in a case where you have a kid who's this young who has that neuropsychological evaluation that points every direction into transferring it, to be able to say that this case, especially given how the state presented their evidence, that this could be that case where it's simply the wrong decision. And that wrong decision can come in the form of being called an abuse of discretion. And I did note that from the appellee's brief, kind of saying, where is the argument of the abuse of discretion? And I don't know how to make it any better than that. I don't know how else to say that there were so many reasons to transfer it. And when you have the burden being on the state to show that there is a sound basis to keep it there, when I truly believe all of that evidence, though this was a tragedy, that all the evidence was in favor of transferring it, and I think you can say that does, it's a rare case, but I think that's an abuse of discretion.
Can I jump back? You said, especially in the way the state presented its case, I'm not sure what you mean by that.
I guess what I mean by that, Your Honor, is just the fact that this was a case where, you know, police reports were offered. You could see from the testimony the police officer, it was very, very brief. We actually had two hearings where the state would have had an opportunity after Dr. Connolly had testified to bring in somebody, even bring in another person from the juvenile court like we did. But it seemed like they just kind of put it out there knowing this child was 14 and knowing that he had all these things going in his favor. That's just the way that I...
Had there been any discovery order entered at the point at which these hearings were taking place? Or a reciprocal discovery order?
Yes, there were.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
How much time did we go over? All right. We'll add that to the appellee's time. And you may approach.
May it please the Court, I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General, and I'm here today to introduce you Derek Brawl. He is a senior certified law student for our office, and he will be presenting the state's argument today.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, my name is Derek Brawl. I'm a senior certified law clerk with the Nebraska Attorney General's Office. First, the state points out that the standard of review for a denial of a motion to transfer to juvenile court is reviewed for an abuse of discretion. As long as the district court's judgment is supported by appropriate evidence in the record, it should not be disturbed on appeal. In this case, the district court's judgment, with respect to Wells' motion to transfer was thoroughly explained in its order, making reference to relevant evidence that it considered in light of the statutory factors.
What about when a defense puts on an expert witness, like Dr. Connolly in this case, and the state does not present any contrary evidence in that way? Isn't that problematic?
Well, I don't think it's required of the state to present an expert in response to the defense's expert. In some, you know, that can be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. In some cases, it may be necessary to respond to a defense expert with an expert of their own. In this case, the state found that it wasn't necessary. And that, you know, that the credibility and weight that goes to an expert's report or testimony, you know, that's all within the discretion of the district court.
What facts could be changed here to make this case constitute an abuse of discretion from your perspective?
What facts could be changed to make it an abuse of discretion?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I guess if the state provided no evidence, which, you know, isn't the case here, the state did provide some evidence. The state did satisfy its burden. You know, we acknowledge that the burden is on the state to provide a sound basis for retention in the district court, but we argue that that the state did satisfy that burden, so that's not the case here. So that would be one situation where I guess, you know, there might be an abuse of discretion.
So from your perspective, as long as the state offers a little bit of evidence, and even though the defense might offer a lot of evidence, that's enough to overcome abuse of discretion?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the minimum standard is for evidence that, you know, the state has to provide in a case like this.
What's so disconcerting about the facts of this case that this 14-year-old should be tried in adult court? Is it the nature of the crime? Is that what's driving it?
Well, that's certainly, a big part of it. And also the fact that if he is tried through the juvenile system, he would be released at the age of 19. And as you alluded to earlier, the juvenile system may not have that many good options to treat somebody like Mr. Wells before he's 19. So, being released at the age of 19, that could be a pretty significant concern, given the fact that he did kill somebody and shoot one other person.
These are such difficult cases. So, I mean, if we tweak the facts a little bit and this defendant had been provoked, right, and he shot a gun that he was carrying with him, do you think, given the evidence that's here, if we change the facts that little bit, would the evidence have suggested this should have been transferred?
It's possible. If there was some evidence of peer pressure, gang pressure, whatever the case is, that could change the outcome. But that's not the case here. There doesn't appear to be any pressure from any of the, any of the other young men that he was with. There's no indication that there was any pressure coming from them.
In fact, the record suggests that the other young man he was with told him not to shoot.
Put it away, correct. Yeah. That's correct.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? This is similar to the question I asked Mr. Ryan, and I'm not sure what the record shows, because, first of all, when a motion to transfer is filed, there's a fairly short time frame that the hearing has to occur in. Is that correct, your understanding?
I'm not sure what the time frame
okay.
is.
Okay. But the state, I guess, does the record reflect that there had been a discovery order entered that gives the state reciprocal discovery? Because I'm not sure what opportunity the state had at the time of this hearing to have had their own independent evaluation done of this juvenile, or of this, or of the defendant, I guess I should say, and because that argument's made in the briefs that the state could have, and I'm not sure that the record bears out that the state had the opportunity to have its own evaluation done. A, given the time parameters of how quickly the hearing has to take place, and B, whether there was a discovery order in place that would have allowed them to do that.
Correct.
And so I don't know if you can enlighten me on that from the from your understanding of the record at all, but that's a question that keeps resonating with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we saw nothing in the record to indicate that that there was a discovery order in place that would have required the state to provide any more evidence than it did. So, there's nothing that we saw in the record.
But you're not saying there wasn't enough time to produce competing evidence?
Well, I think regardless, I think that the state did provide enough evidence anyways to survive the motion to transfer. Like I said, I think that the state did satisfy its burden.
So I think Mr. Ryan said that there were two hearings after Dr. Conley testified at which the state could have produce further evidence.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think that, it's a case-by-case determination, like I said earlier, as far as if the state needs to provide an expert in response to a defense expert. In this case, the state decided that wasn't necessary.
So it's the state's burden, and your position is, as long as they put in some evidence, they've met their burden. If the trial judge decides that's enough, that should survive an abuse of discretion review by this court.
Well, I don't know what the minimum standard is. I don't know even if there is a minimum standard. But I think in this case, there was enough evidence to support the retention in the district court. And the district court elaborated on its findings relevant to each of those statutory factors from Nebraska Revised Statute Section 43-276. The And the state provided evidence relevant to those factors, you know, whether it be the just the nature of the crime committed, you know, the evidence of Mr. Wells' involvement in the Flatland Bloods gang, evidence that there's no indication that he's since been jumped out of that gang, so for all we know, he's still a member of that gang.
I'm intrigued by Mr. Ryan's margin of error argument and the fact that if this had been 7.5 weeks earlier, we wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. What's your response to that?
Well, it's sad. There's no question about that. You know, the state sees this as a very tragic situation, and the fact that it would have been required, statutorily required, to be tried in juvenile court only 7 weeks earlier. But the fact is that he is authorized by statute to be tried in adult court. He is above 14 years old. I think the statute that says that is section 29-1816. It just lists the different felonies that can be tried in adult court if you're above 14 years of age. You know, that statute doesn't say, you know, well, if you're only a few months above 14, you know, maybe it should be tried. I mean, it doesn't say that. If you're 14, you can be tried in the adult court. And it's obviously decided on a case-by-case basis. But those decisions are made within the discretion of the district court, and there was in this situation there was reason to try this in adult court. It was obviously a very serious crime, you know, the most serious, and so there was reason to try this case in the adult court despite his young age. And I think I noted the Supreme Court case where a defendant was 14 years old, 3 months, and he was tried in the adult court, and the Supreme Court affirmed that decision to retain it in the adult court. Again, you know, I think that there was a few of those factors from Nebraska Revised Statute, section 43-276, that the court highlighted, that it felt favored retention in adult court. One of those was whether the best interest of the juvenile and security of the public may require that the juvenile continue in secure detention for a period extending beyond his age of majority. And you know, as we alluded to earlier, if this was tried in the juvenile court, Tyon would be required to be released at the age of 19, and I think that was a pretty substantial concern for the district court. And then another factor was whether the juvenile has been convicted of or has acknowledged unauthorized use of a firearm. There's obviously significant evidence in this case that Tyon used a firearm, not only possessed one and is known to possess firearms for older gang members, but he also used it, killing one person, wounding another. So that was obviously a very significant concern for the district court. And then also another factor from that section 43-276 was whether the juvenile is a criminal street gang member. And as I alluded to earlier, there was evidence that Mr. Wells was jumped into the Flatland Bloods gang when he was 12 years old, and there's no indication that he's since been jumped out of that gang.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ball.
Thank you.
All right. The case will be taken under advisement. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. We will issue a decision as soon as we can. You're excused.